Hey, what's going on, team? Hey, today we have an awesome episode and I'm really excited about it because this is the first fireside episode that I've been wanting to do for a while. The idea here is, you know, we've had regular episodes with just me talking with you, and then we have interviews where I'm asking questions and bringing in a leader in a field, and I think we learn a lot from those. But I also want to have some times where I get together with somebody around the fire, you know, we're sharing a tasty beverage, maybe smoking a cigar. We're just talking about whatever comes up. And I'd like to invite you around the fire as two men hash stuff out, just like we talk about in the intro for the show. I have an awesome guest today. His name's Chris Great. Started out as a friend of a friend, and we connected. He does a lot of social media work. And the moment I met this guy, I knew, holy smokes, I got to bring him on the show. If you can't see, Chris is this mountain of a man. He's this huge, just stereotypical, manly man dude. The guy could bench press a tank. And he is also an avid lover of the arts. He has a perfume line. He does tailoring stuff. He collects specialty watches. And he's a devout man of God. So all around awesome dude. Now I want to be upfront with you. This is my first go at this kind of thing. And so I was outside and my sound system kind of sucked. So I messed up. There's some background noise. So I'm going to be upfront. The audio quality isn't at the standard that I would like it to be. However, Chris came over, spent his time. We had an awesome interview that I think you're really, really going to enjoy. So please, forgive the poor audio quality. You might hear a plane flying in the background, but maybe that adds to the spirit, helps you get in the mood as we hear the crackling of the campfire in the background, okay? So strap in, it's gonna be an awesome episode. Let's get after it. Some of the most awesome times in a man's life for reflection and growth is when they're sitting around the campfire with other men they respect, hashing stuff out. So if you're a Christian man looking for reflection and connection as you grow closer to the person God made you to be, pull up a chair, throw another log on the fire, and pour yourself a tasty beverage, and get ready to number your stories.
So I am going to try to challenge myself. I'm generally a very private person, and I know that I have a really interesting story to tell that I think can help people. So I'm going to really try to challenge myself to be a complete open book. It's interesting because, like, if the camera weren't on, then, I mean, that's exactly how it would be. Because I know we're still getting to know one another, right, as friends. So I'm going to try to do the same while we're on camera. So I guess what I'm prefacing is nothing's off limits. Feel free to ask me anything you want. You can ask me about my tattoos. You can ask me why I got them, what they mean. Anything you want to ask me, ask me.
Heck yeah. I keep all my tattoos. So I also have several tattoos. All of them are very special to me, as I'm sure yours are as well. But I've kept them in places where, like, they can't be seen, you know?
That was smart.
So the only one you can see is when I'm wearing shorts, you know.
Oh, nice. Yeah,
my Mexican Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
My wife. So.
That's cool.
And then I got a big thing on my... We're only the select few to see these.
Yeah, I play my cards.
Yeah, I know.
So, like, how do you feel about profanity? I mean, obviously, I wouldn't cuss like a sailor, but, like...
I am personally trying to break that habit because it is something I do a lot.
It's interesting. I mean, as I've gotten older, it's funny, like, so many things that I think my parents' generation and my grandparents' generation tried to correct my generation for in black culture, as we're getting older and into our late 30s, we're now realizing how right that they actually were.
Yeah.
And how much of it was really detrimental to our growth as human beings.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to, you know, there's just other things in my life that I'm trying to be very mindful of. And I've just grown a lot, man. I mean, I came from, well, I shouldn't say I came from. I came from a great background. I threw myself into a not so great background. And when I decided to change my life, I realized that I was, deep in my core, I was really so far removed from that person. And what I was really trying to do, prove to myself that I was tough, because I grew up with the world telling me otherwise.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh wait, I love classical music. I love jazz. I love, you know, all these other different genres of music. I love art. I love fine art. There's so much that I held back from myself because I was trying to fit a mold to who I thought the world wanted me to be in order for me to have respect. You know what I mean?
Not absolutely.
Or I like being a nice guy. You know, I tell my nephews that all the time, because they're in that like phase where they're trying to grow up and be tough, and it's like, hey man, a tough man is not a mean man. A tough man is a nice guy that knows he can be a monster when necessary.
Oh.
But it feels great to be kind to people. You know what I mean?
No, I absolutely agree with that. And I don't know if you see this, being a fellow big dude, but like, almost every station I've gone to, every time because I move a lot, anytime I go somewhere, there's always somebody who feels it necessary to pick a fight.
Oh yeah.
Does everyone else experience this? It is always the first part of me going somewhere. Somebody starts throwing haymaker punches, and then you have to be like,
"Can you still experience this now?" Like,
yes.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm not talking like as a child. I'm talking like as a grown up. Every military, because it's a very hierarchical, you know, Lord of the Flies.
But do you think that's because you're in the military, though? So there's also the ego, there's the, like, all of you all have been in the gauntlet, and in some way, like, you saw the mindset of, like, you are still in that gauntlet.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. It's certainly competitive, and everyone's seeing, all right, who's top dog? I'm a nice guy. Let's work together. Let's get stuff done. Almost always there's a moment where it's like, listen, man, I don't want to fight, but if you desperately want to, we're grown-ups, we're not having fist fights in the parking lot, but like the butting of heads, like two rams in the field, you know, and after that, they're like, okay, never mind. And then we can be friends. Honestly, some of my best friends, people who I'm really close to or work really well together, it started with them coming at me and then being like, I think you're testing out. It's like the raptors testing the wire, you know? How far can I push you?
Right.
And then when you're like, stop it.
Yeah.
I go, okay.
See, I haven't really dealt with that much into my adulthood. I experienced that a lot when I was in my young adulthood.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was also just kind of the environment that I was in, where it was also very competitive. And it was also very, you know, you kind of had to size up the person next to you to understand like where you stood and will you survive in a situation. Not only that, if something happens, can this person handle themselves where you don't have to save somebody, or if you need help, will they help you? Nowadays, I don't really get that. You know what I get? It's the opposite. It's more like, and I get this a lot in the gym. Like, I remember I was talking to this kid. I walked up to this kid because he had a Longhorn shirt on. I was like, oh, are you from Texas? And he's like, oh no, I went to school there, blah 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 blah. I was like, oh, that's cool. And I was like, yeah, man, I see you working out. And I remember one day I was just like, man, he's strong. He could kill me. And I know he meant it as a compliment.
It's a nice thing.
But in my mind, I was just kind of like, I kind of lost respect for him, because it was like, I understand what you're saying, but I wouldn't admit that to somebody. You know, I just, like, it just seems like, to me, I felt it was like a lack of self-belief, because anything's possible. I've gotten beat up by people who are smaller than me before. I know that it can happen, you know? It's like, it's like, you know, I don't know, just it feels weird when people automatically look at me and then assume like there's nothing that I can do in this situation, because it's like, maybe
I, you know, the I've never been to prison, and I'm, God willing, I hope not to, but you know, the joke about like, all right, if you ever go to prison, you just walk in and punch the biggest dude in the face. And that's all well and good.
Yeah,
unless you're the biggest dude. And then you're like, why is everybody punching me in the face? Man, leave me alone. Yeah. I'm just trying to get through the day.
You know what's crazy about prison? I don't know if I ever told you that.
No.
Okay, so I did end up doing some time. If anybody were to watch this and they've been in the Texas penal system, have to correctly state this. I have not been to quote unquote prison. I've been to state jail.
Jail versus prison.
Well, there's okay. jail, and then there's in Texas there's jail, then there's state jail, then there's prison. So okay. If your sentence is over a year but no more than 2 years, you go to state jail. If it's okay. over 2 years, you go to prison. So
gotcha.
I've been to state jail, but it's basically the same thing because it's run on the same yard, whatever. But the point that I'm trying to make is it's actually one of the kindest places you'll ever go to.
Yeah.
Because most people are doing a lot of time and they want to go home. Mm-hmm. Or everybody just kind of has the awareness that at any moment, anything can happen. The slightest form of disrespect can turn into a situation that you don't want it to be.
Yeah.
So you hear a lot of excuse me, how you doing, acknowledgement when you're walking by somebody. Obviously, you got a bunch of knuckleheads, but for me, when I first got out, it was a huge adjusting back to the world. Not as much because I'm from a state where people are just kind by nature, but especially when I moved here. And it was such an adjustment to deal with civilians that had no level of respect.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, to this day, my closest relationships and friendships are people that are either from the streets or people that grew up in the military.
Yeah.
Because we have that level of respect and we understanding where it's just second nature.
Yeah.
There's no need to treat another man anything less than because you understand it's not worth what it could be, you know?
Yeah. Something along my journey to becoming a man, and there's been a lot of steps on that path, but if I'm honest, when I was younger, I'm talking high school going into college, me, I did very well in sports. I did very well in school. Frankly, I thought I was just better than other people. And it was only when I tried to be a good man, I started realizing how much I wasn't.
Mm.
And that, I cannot judge anybody. You are just me. And just lucky to have not fallen in traps, lucky to have not been in situations where I certainly was broken and capable enough to go down different paths, you know? Somebody I am very close to and is a beloved person in my life had a hard past and made this incredible transformation and is crushing it. And I'm not sure I would have had the strength to do that. And so
really, you think so? I mean, you sound like you, I mean, in a positive sense, you sound like somebody that's an overachiever. So,
I've been very,
a lot of grit.
Yeah. I like to think I'm pretty resilient, right? But through the grace of God, he's shepherded me through things. But I guess my point is that I really respect that. And then to hear, I had no idea, man. And then to say hey, I had this, and then all the things that you have going on, I think that is incredible. You are crushing it now on the outside. Hearing all that. So what is it? It's you got the fragrance stuff. By the way, this smells awesome. I love it. The more I'm wearing it, the more I'm like, this fire, dude.
Thank you, man.
This is about to be my go-to. It's going to replace my other stuff.
Cool. That's good to hear because I was in the lab and I was I was on the way out the door. I was like, I should bring them something to smell.
Yeah.
I'm trying to create this habit because for the longest time, I've been huddled in my cocoon, not letting the world smell anything. It's I'm not getting good feedback.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be a lot more open to what the market is saying. So anyway, long story short, I was let me grab something to bring to them. And I didn't have anything prepared. I didn't have anything ready. But I had these prototypes that had been sitting on my shelf for a little bit. Minus hers, that's ready. But I wanted to bring you something specifically masculine. And I honestly forgot all about this fragrance. I made it a year ago. Completely forgot about it. So to hear that you like it is cool because I didn't like it. And that's been a huge lesson for me is a lot of the things that I've created that I didn't like,
other people did.
A lot of other people love.
Right.
That's my favorite.
Yeah.
Okay. Huh. Mm. It's a lesson in, really a lesson in business. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter what you don't do or don't like, as long as it upholds your standards. It's a market response possibly that.
Hey, you learn, you go after it. That's a huge point. I'm going to go to work. As men do, they're going to smell me.
Right.
But when I go to work and the influx of people are like, bro, where'd you get that? That's awesome. How would they find it?
I mean, I have a website up, but it's under construction. What I'm actually working on right now that I'm kind of head down in is the B2B aspect of the business.
What's that?
So with most perfumers, they'll do a B2B side, and that can be like private label, fine fragrances, shampoos, soaps, art installations, hotel installations, signature sets. So that's what I'm trying to work on right now, because what I really want to do, I just came from a world I've always bootstrapped and put in my own money to do things.
Yeah.
This is going to be a business venture that I know is, I'm looking at it right now, it's gonna be north of 250 grand just to launch.
Yeah.
And if, I'll go get funding if I have to, yeah. But I'd rather have a substantial amount of my own capital so I don't have a bunch of people that don't really care about what I'm doing the way I care about what I'm doing, trying to tell me what to do. And being able to justify that because it's their money I'm playing with.
Yeah.
So, right. You know.
Boy, that is a world that, frankly, I know nothing about.
Yeah. You know, I mean, me neither. This is the aspect of business that's very new to me. I mean, my professional background is a marketer, and then, yes, I have side hustles and things that I do on the side for extra income, but that's really more so, you know, with luxury acquisitions, it's you're acquiring something for less and then selling it for more, right? You know, making a actual business plan, developing a business model, researching the questions that I'm going to get asked, you know, by venture capitalists when I go try to raise money, and looking at 4-year projections. This is all so new to me, and it's exciting, but at the same time, it's like
scary.
Damn, I had no idea I needed to be prepared for all this. It's like,
yeah, man.
It's a little scary, but it's exciting, you know.
And you see the people who've made it,
right?
Right, and you're like, oh man. I mean, they. I'm not like that. And they have it all figured out. They've got all this through the experience of, you know, getting picked up and launching the book, and then have that going pretty well, and then moving over into the podcasting space. And so as I'm growing in that, I've gotten a couple opportunities to meet some folks who are people I follow and like, and I'm like, oh man, that's so cool.
Right.
And then meeting them, they're just regular dudes.
Right.
You know? Like, bro, I still don't know what I'm doing. Like, I guess I've done it long enough that I'm confident and I'm figuring it out, but...
But you personally, or is that what they're telling you?
No, that's what they're saying to me, you know, is that the guys I really respect, and then like, just keep going. I mean, or they've gotten over the hurdle where they're, okay, I think I'm good enough. Mm. And you think you're good enough? What are you talking about? And so that's really cool to see. All right, there was nothing special beforehand. You just had a passion. You pursued it. You learned. And you tried 10 things. 9 of them failed. One of them worked out and you kept going. Something about that is so exciting. It's like when I was a kid, I always wanted to be an explorer. And I remember it was so devastating to me when I realized, where else is there to explore? Like, I'm not going to go find a new land. And frankly, I'm probably not going to be an astronaut, you know? That's one of the things that I really loved about physics, is that, oh, I could find the bounds of some new idea and explore that. Mm. But I think in the developmental space, it's also like an adventure. I mean, you're charting into unknown territories, finding your way. That's really cool.
Well, you know, I think the biggest exploration so far has been the exploration of self.
And oh,
I know people
say
that all the time. It's about the journey and who you become, but it really is, man. And especially with perfumery, like, mm-hmm. I've always been pretty talented. I grew up playing sports, so I was really talented in sports.
When
I decided to pick
up... You don't say.
Yeah, correct. When I decided to pick up music, I was extremely talented in music. This is literally the hardest thing I have ever tried to master my life. The hardest thing. There's been so many times where I've just wanted to quit. And I mean, you're painting with your nose. And as a human being, that's a sense that we do not use that much. So it would be like trying to drive a race car with your feet and trying to learn how to do that so that you can compete in NASCAR. So the journey that I've gone through of disciplining myself to finish when I start, or even learning that if something isn't complete within a year, it doesn't mean that it's never going to be complete. It just just means that I don't have the tools and the understanding and the knowledge right now to bring that vision to life.
Oh, I love that.
You know, and that's been a huge eye-opener for me. I need constant movement, constant progress. I'm constantly checking myself, judging myself, like looking at my meter and seeing like where I am and where to go next. So it's kind of helped me with my ability to be okay with not going fast as long as I'm going far. But even so, I think that's I think it's organic. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't know that you were going to record out here in your backyard. This is kind of like your setup. But to me, I think there's an authenticity to it. And I don't know how much is in frame, but like when you were saying, oh, sorry for the mess, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I actually think it works because, again, you are a father of two kids and a husband, and that's life. Like,
yeah, man.
Your backyard's not always going to look pristine. Your house is not going to always look 100% put together. Nobody's is, unless they're like balling out of control and they live with maids or they're a freaking psychopath. I think people will resonate with that, especially when we're in an age where all the podcasts are in these studios and, you know, it's just super clean. It's like,
I refuse to be like the content creator who sets up their camera next to their bed and then gets back into bed and pretends to wake up. And you're like, that's so fake, man. You can't just live your life in a performance. Be you.
Well, you know what's funny is, so my hat trick as a marketer is social media.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if we weren't in a workplace and you asked me, like, what my honest opinion of it is, I hate it. I like working from a brand side and being able to tell really cool stories and do creative things, but I hate what it does to people. Mm. And I have some friends that are influencers, and God bless them, they're great people, but like I see the way they live their life, and it's just like, I couldn't do that. Yeah. I couldn't constantly be in the camera because, one, that's not authentic to who I am, and two, I'm just a man of action. Like, I like doing things and helping people through doing things, not telling somebody what they should do or showing somebody what it to me, it feels very self-glorifying. And as a man of God, it's like I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
Before I came here, I prayed, right?
I love that.
And the prayer that I asked for was, and I say this daily, but I asked God to speak through me and speak through you in a way that when people see us, they see him. Even if they can't recognize it's him, let them recognize something so divine that transcends these human bodies and minds and egos and fears and worries and doubts. And I think a lot of times, and obviously there are exceptions, but I think a lot of times when you see people on social media speaking, they're speaking from such a base human level that isn't elevated and doesn't necessarily feel praiseworthy.
That's it, right? That's the point. A lot of men are like, hey, what do you want to do? And you say, well, I want to make an impact. I want to leave my name on the world. And I, if I'm honest, I still feel that way.
Oh, of course.
You know, absolutely. I mean, a part of me is still like that.
Absolutely, yeah.
What I hope and pray for is that it's not my name, mm-hmm. my mark I put on the world. I just show his light,
right?
You know,
right.
No, I love that, dude.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to state that in a way that like don't come for me, influencers. You know,
no. I got you.
That's just my personal preference. Like, and I know that's a hump that I have to get over when I launch a brand. I'm sure I won't have a problem doing it, but
I think there is an appetite for authenticity. Mm-hmm. People want to see. I mean, of course, things are inspiring to hear the ultra runner who wakes up at 4 a.m. every day.
David Goggins of the
world. Which I'm like, I love David Goggins. Like, I watch him all the time. I'm like,
yeah, I have both of his books.
Who's going to carry the boats, you know? But at the same time, I also really resonate with, I mean, it's one of the reasons why when we started talking, I was like, immediately, in the first 5 minutes, man, this guy is awesome. And I super want to get to know him. Immediate connection, and I think men who are strong in their faith can bring that out. Absolutely. In the world, you know, so many people are looking for that connection, and when they see it, they're like, this is what I've been looking for. I love it. And that draws them in, and then you're like, hey,
yeah,
let me tell you about God, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you, being in this area, how long have you been in this area?
Almost 3 years.
So
two and a half.
I would feel that this area is probably a lot more liberal than, you know, where I'm from, right? Where I mean, we're right by the Bible Belt. So almost everybody in their grandmother has faith.
Yeah.
How would you gauge the level of faith here and how those conversations went with people?
I think it seems pretty bifurcated. Certainly there is a hard push to the left, especially since I work in the government a lot. Now that it's different because the military, a lot of folks in the military are very patriotic. So I certainly see a lot of that. But we have a community, especially in our church, just down the street, which is very, very devout, and which is amazing. It's one of the reasons why we love it here so much is because, we live in Fairfax County, which is, there's a lot of craziness going on in Fairfax County. Right. It's like us and Loudoun, and we're like Bananarama. But there is a hyper devout, godly group of people who also live here. And then I think they're like everywhere, it's everybody in the middle, you know, who are just, they're living their life and they're good folk. And I think any population, you just try to love and not hate the person. That's another thing that's been a journey in my life is I used to get just so angry. Really? It was like, like I had to save the world. And then you realize I am not going to save the world. And it is wildly egotistical to think that I would, but I can make a difference in people's lives. I can love people and connect with them and maybe make a small change in the people around me. And that, I think, is changing the world.
Yeah. See, I do have a desire to change a lot of lives.
I mean,
granted, my grandmother also spoke over me and told me things when I was a kid that she probably shouldn't have told a kid, you know. And it's carried with me, like, nah, God, I gotta live up to this like divine revelation that you had, you know. But what I think the only thing that I don't know if it necessarily angers me, it just kind of disappoints me, is so I think the interesting thing about living in the South is no matter where you are, you're kind of so close to the nitty gritty in a way, you know, like it's just one step away. So there's kind of this, it's kind of this level of respect that everybody has. And I'm definitely blanket terming this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But when I moved out here, I kind of got a firsthand view of, I guess, American classism in a way, you know. That's breaks my heart because I've met some of these people and I know that they're fathers, they're sons, and they're really good to their mothers or their brothers. And it's like, if this person just had a better opportunity, they probably wouldn't make these choices. And I think when I look at the system and the way prison's set up, there's a reason why 78% of convicts end up going right back to prison within 3 months of them getting released. You were there because you broke the law, and you should be there. You do the crime, you do the time, but most of the time you broke the law because you were trying to survive. And now you've gotten years taken away from your life without any kind of rehabilitation, and you're thrown right back into that same environment. But you're behind now. You know, all that opportunity that you could have had to educate yourself or rehabilitate yourself or even try to figure out a plan to get out of that environment was taken away from you and just thrown right back there. So I think for me, that's the thing that breaks my heart and angers me. I've had these conversations with people that seem to be so judgmental, and it's like, I don't think you understand how good you actually have it, you know?
I become more and more aware of the blessings I've been gifted with, and I agree with the, especially here in DC, the elitism.
Yeah.
And being from, well, I guess moved around South or Midwest or wherever, the flyover states, and it just seems like a whole other world to some people.
Yeah.
And that's one of the gifts of moving around so much, is that you get to see the,
in your perspective,
the awesomeness of all different kinds of places. My wife and I actually were just talking about this a second ago, of feeling a calling to go do some kind of mentorship or like in prisons or we're doing this thing for Lent, and it's like the Jesse tree, but it was called the Jesus tree, and going through, and every day there's like a reading. One of the things we covered today was about serving the poor and the sick and the elderly or the imprisoned and things like that. And people are called to serve all those people, but I especially like the idea of having been a basic training commander, having gone and taught and coached, and I deal a lot with 18 to 20 year old, especially men, seem like they're finding their way. And Lord, who needs that more? Who needs to be loved more than people who have stumbled and have fallen? God loves them just as much as he loves me.
Yeah. I mean, I tell people that all the time. Like, I don't carry cash often, but if I do, anytime I see somebody that's asking for cash, I always give it to them. I always give it to them. That's not to brag. That's just something that I've always done. And I remember the first time I did it, they were like, aren't you worried, like, if they're on drugs or blah, 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 blah. And it's like, well, it's not my decision to make whether or not they're worthy of having this money just because they're on drugs. That's God's decision. And quite frankly, I don't really care. Like, I think back to the story in the Bible where Jesus says, get away from me because you never knew me. And they were like, what are you talking about? And he's like, remember that time when I was hungry and you wouldn't feed me, or when I was in jail and you wouldn't come visit me, and so on and so forth. Yeah. I don't even know where I was going with that. I don't know.
You for no reason. I think that that's very powerful, and frankly, something that I struggle with, because I feel very convicted in that. You know, you see panhandlers or people begging, and I don't give money generally. Mm-hmm. I do try to stop and talk to them and say, like, "Hey, man, what's your name? Are you hungry? Let's go get a sandwich or something." But I, throughout my life, have been, I'm not going to give money. Now, but maybe that's wrong. I'm not saying that.
If you were homeless, though,
yeah,
let's just say you were homeless, mm-hmm. your wife left you, your kids left you, no career, no job, all those accolades that you had stripped, taken away. Can't even shower. I don't even know where you're going to get your next meal from. And you were like at the lowest of your low of your low. You said to yourself earlier that you don't know if you were put in those situations when you make it out. Isn't it safe to say that there might be a part of you that just wants to get high and just get high? You know, like, you would have a drink, like, you're in such a dire situation, you just want to forget for a little bit. Now, I'm not saying that that's right.
Yeah.
But who am I to tell you what you should or shouldn't be doing? I don't walk in your shoes.
Yeah.
But what I can do is love you.
I 100% agree with that we're called to love. I think the question is, what is the best way to show love? Right? Maybe it is, hey man, here's a couple bucks. That is a way of showing you that I know what you're probably going to do with this. I still love you.
Right.
What I try to do is still show that love without that. So this was several years ago, but there was a guy, homeless guy. I saw him all the time. I was in grad school, and I'd walk to class and walk back, and he was always begging. He was usually high, but developed a friendship, might not be the right word, but a congeniality. Yeah. Hey man, how's it going? You know, I see you every day. Like, I'm gonna stop and talk to you, and like, how are you? Hey man, are you hungry? Like, come eat with me. And then we got to talking, and I was like, do you want a job? Because if you would like a job, I can try to help find you a job. And he wasn't at a place where he was ready to make that leap, you know? And so, like, I think at the time I was really put off with him, because he had said yes, and I was like, great. You walk 20 miles a day. I knew somebody who worked at the USPS kind of thing, and I was like, let me get you an interview. You're like, you're already walking around all day long. why don't we get you paid for it? And then he said he wanted to do it and then didn't show up, and which I, at the time, again, I was really put off by it. Now I see, like, maybe he just wasn't ready for that, right? Maybe he wasn't out of place, and I certainly shouldn't look down on the guy for...
Yeah, I think that's really what I'm trying to say is I don't want to say I'm advocating for drug use, but in my mind, it's like, okay, there's a 50-50 chance that this person either is hungry or wants to get high. It's like, I don't, those are odds I don't want to play with, you know, in a sense. It's like, it's just money. I have the money. It's just money. You know, like, this isn't going to hurt me. So yeah. I'd rather take that chance that you might be hungry. And if you're not, then you're not.
Yeah.
But that one time out of 1,000, that could be Jesus. And I tell him no, I'm going to hear about it. I'm going to be like, I knew I should have given you that money.
That's tough. I think as a baseline, a common ground that we could both share is just showing love to people, you know, and doing our best. And hopefully you were not judged too harshly, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think I honestly get that though from like my upbringing. Like my dad was that way. Not necessarily with poor people, but he was like the neighborhood dad.
Yeah.
He'd feed everybody and be kind to everybody. And then me and my friends, we were that way with each other. Like if one of us had it, because it's usually like we went through this period where we're all trying to figure ourselves out. So maybe one person will be further in life than the other.
Yeah.
But it's like if one of us had it, we all had it. And then my older kid brother, I think I got the habit from him, was we'd be on the streets doing what we were doing, and he'd treat homeless people the same way.
Yeah. You know,
somebody, he never, ever, ever said no when somebody asked for money. And I just kind of adopted that sort of behavior. And I hope, I pray that I've never given anybody any money and it's resulted in a loss of life because of a choice that they made. That would break my heart. But
I tell you what I don't want to do, and that is treat somebody like garbage.
Exactly.
Okay. Something I'm very interested that you said, and I want to hear more about this, is that you opened up with talking about your love of art and all that. My mom was a theater professor, and so growing up I had, wow. I mean, she recently just retired, and so growing up I had this weird dichotomy between my dad, who was a military guy, who was like, football, steak, hunting, and then my mom was like, all right, now you're going to be in the choir and acting and like what all these things.
Pairing.
I know, it was pretty fun. And frankly, I feel like I use a lot of that artistic acting and performing experience in my military career, but it always made me sad that there's so much of the creative community that I really, really like. And it's so socially different than where I'm at. For example, when I was at grad school, there was this poetry troupe, and they were protesting something that I was not, they were on the other side of the aisle from me.
Yeah.
And they were like having this open poetry recitation, and I am going to go to this stupid poetry troupe and I'm going to beat them at their own game. And I went kind of out of spite.
Yeah.
And it was this amazing experience. And obviously we were different sides of the aisle, but we came together in love of this art form. I made a lot of friends and it was a really cool experience. How have you found yourself in this artistic space? And it's very rare I have seen to find someone, a kindred spirit, who is also a big fan of music and art and all of the different creative stuff that you're in. It is not common to find a big, athletic, godly, top of the line, manly man who is also into art and theater and, you know.
So, to be 100% honest with you, what helped me was just really cutting off the old world that I used to come from, where, you know, hyper-masculinity was, kept you alive and kept you respected. And then also a lot of self-worth, man. Like, I used to have a really hard time loving myself because I grew up getting bullied. And
really?
Yeah, I was bullied up until like 9th grade. And that's something that I still to this day like carry with me.
That's
why I have this tendency to be aggressive when I don't want to be. I'm not one to avoid confrontation. Not that I'll meet it with physical aggression.
Yeah,
but that now as I've matured, the way I meet confrontation is like, hey, let's deal with it. Like if it's a problem, let's deal with it right now.
Yeah.
And so that we're not going off and it's festering or blah blah blah, right? And so one, separating myself from a world that I no longer want to be a part of. And then doing the work to really forgive myself for, quote unquote, the mistakes I made when I was young, for getting bullied and kind of like healing from that. And through that, I started to discover who I was. And going through these periods where I've separated myself from the world intentionally to kind of draw closer to God and learn more about myself has helped with that.
Yeah.
To where, you know, as I've gotten older, I've become more and more comfortable with who I am. And I really, really love who I am and every facet of who I am. And I don't really care what anybody else thinks about me. You know what I mean? Like, even with something like tailoring, like, I'm really tailoring. Into tailoring.
Really?
Really. If you were to go to my house right now, there's fabric swatches all over the top.
Oh, that's awesome.
I use them as bookmarks. I'm always studying. I'm reading books. I said in another world, I probably would have been a tailor. That's, you know, not something that a lot of very masculine men are into from such a deep perspective. Maybe on an outward, like, alpha male businessman wants to go get his bespoke suit.
Yeah, yeah.
He's not learning about the mills. He's not learning about the textiles. He's not trying to understand why his suit should be a 120s worst of wool, or why his favorite knockaround pair of pants should be Calvary twill trousers or something like that. Like, I'm into proportions and all that. And a lot of that just comes from, again, just loving who I am, so to speak. Like, we're so multifaceted. Yeah. And in this world, people try to put us in a box and want us to be just one way because that's what makes them comfortable. Because the world is a dangerous place. So the more easily I can identify who you are and what you're about, the safer I feel. But that's not who I am. I'm not easy to identify because I'm multifaceted. You know, like, I'm made in his likeness. He's not necessarily simple to understand. His word is, if you pay attention, but we'll never understand the breath of God. So why would anybody be one-dimensional? Why would a human being be one-dimensional?
No, I love
it. I don't even know if that answers your question.
Absolutely. Holy smokes. Okay. So Adam Driver, the guy from Star Wars, and I guess he's done a lot of that stuff. I really appreciate the work he's doing with arts in the armed forces. And so listening to him talk about how, you know, his transformation from being a Marine, and then he finds himself in Juilliard, and for the first time as he's processing and going through his education of the classics and tapping into, because art is our medium for giving emotion. Communicating emotion from one person to another is through art. And he was like, holy smokes, if ever there was a community of people who need to be able to access and communicate their emotions, it's the manly men in their life who desperately need to find a way to communicate what's in here. And we're closing ourselves off to that, to these tools to communicate who we are.
I'll be honest with you. I think above all, hypermasculine men need the arts probably a lot more than other people, because it helps us tap into that part of our humanity that actually makes us human in a way. Like, art is the expression of humanity in all of its forms. And as a masculine man, when you're constantly on the go and you're constantly just trying to get things done, provide for so-and-so, take care of so-and-so, you don't really have the opportunity to take in the full breath of life. And one of the things that I liked, that I read this dude's book, his name is Pejman Gadimi, and he had a book called, I think, like, The Fifth Circle or The Inner Circle or something like that. But one of the things that he was saying was he makes it a point in his life to surround himself with beauty in all of its forms, because as a man, it helps him slow down and realize the breadth of life. Mm-hmm. And if you look at nature, it's the balance of chaos and beauty. And so I guess that's what I'm trying to say, is I think the arts help men tap into that perspective to see the beauty of the world in a way that I think other things don't, you know?
I love that. I think about the Walt Whitmans and the Hemingways and the Dostoevskys. I'm reading The Brothers Karamazov now, and, like, holy smokes, it's so long, by the way. It's like, I'm halfway through, and it's been a month. Wow. You know, absolutely. It is so long. The audiobook is like 48 hours, you know, but every word of it is like, yes, this is amazing. Like finding how to connect with those things is big. I love that.
So do you do anything in your life that helps you to, I guess, tap into the beauty of humanity or even surround yourself with beauty?
Absolutely. First off, the church I go to, I think, puts a lot of reverence on surrounding beauty. And so we try to go to some of the performances they put on, like the musical performances or classic music, and which as a kid I was like, this is so terrible, how could anyone like this? Yeah. And now I like right. totally love it. I'm like, this is great,
dude. I'll still hear a John Frusciante solo and like it'll move me to tears.
Oh,
or
yeah,
I'll hear Requiem in D minor and just be like, I can listen to that song no matter how many times I listen to that piece. Every time I hear it, I'm just like blown away.
Yeah,
like I'm just, whoa, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have a good friend who is an artist, and he, in fact, his painting is hanging up in the living room. I'll show it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have a lot of his art, and it's been really cool to see him revive that in a new part of his life. Because I think for a long time, he was dealing with a lot of pain and struggle, and that was the source for a lot of his art. And his life is blossoming now, and so he's painting again and stuff in an awesome way. I'm a big fan of that, and I hope to, especially now that I'm writing again and getting into that, I hope to create and be a part of that.
What are you smoking, by the way?
I don't know. I just took the thing off. I think I burned it. I don't know. Something robust. It was like $4, so it's not anything fantastic, frankly. But, okay.
Oh, so I want to ask you something more on this topic of beauty.
Yeah.
So I find that a lot of hypermasculine men that I've met, I think this is more so with American men.
Yeah.
We tend to be so focused on our masculinity and being men that do things that I find a lot of those hypermasculine men don't want to have nice things in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean from a materialist sense, but to me, again, that goes back to experiencing beauty, where I'm one of those people where I like, and maybe it's because I'm artistic and I enjoy craftsmanship, but I like the finer things in life, not because I'm materialistic, but because I can appreciate the effort that's gone into those things. Yeah. And the craftsmanship and the artisanalship. And I'm one of those people where I can cook. So it's like, I don't eat out a lot because I can cook. I grew up with a dad that knew how to cook and taught me how to cook. So if I go out to eat, I want to have an experience.
Yeah.
And I think I've balanced that really well with my masculinity. And I guess what I'm trying to ask you is, like, what is your viewpoint on experiencing responsibly?
I think these things are gifts from God. God gave us pleasure and beauty and joy so that we could better know Him. It's when we replace the spiritual thing with just the physical thing. Why is wine good? Well, that is so that we can lift up men's hearts and have joy and a shared love amongst brothers, which comes from God. But we try to replace that goodness with, well, I'm just going to drink to get drunk because I like the way I feel when I'm drunk. But really, the gift is that feeling of joy you have in sharing that experience with other people.
Right.
Even love between, you know, a husband and wife. Well, we're trying to emulate that because that comes with sacrifice as well. Real beauty also is tinged with the sacrifice to get there.
Mm.
It's like the difference between climbing a mountain and seeing the sunrise or driving to the top of the mountain.
Right.
No shade if people are driving to the top of the mountain. But it's a different experience.
Yeah.
Because you have participated in that and seen it in its beauty. I think looking at art that speaks to you, that resonates on some part of yourself, that you're like, man, that reminds me of this special part of my life. Or I really like surreal paintings where there's the beauty of God's creation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're just manufacturing something or you're just collecting it and putting it in because it has monetary value, right. That's different.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. For
you
sure.
know?
I'm not able to do that. You know?
Yeah.
So I love timepieces. I love them. And I always have. But when I was younger, I loved them for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
You know, the immature version of myself, they were a marker of, hey, I'm important, pay attention.
Yeah, I'm better than everybody. Right. I have this thing no one else has.
Where now it's like, I love this form of art.
Yeah, the artistry, the craftsmanship, the
and it's like
effort that went into making those things.
And it's like, nobody cares. Like, I remember when I bought my first luxury timepiece, that ego came back and was like, oh man, nobody ever asked me about my damn watch, except for like watch collectors. Nobody cared. And so, but that made it even more beautiful, where it's like, as I continue to collect, I can appreciate these things for what they really were, because you don't need it. It's, you know, you have a phone now, right? But it's like so many thousands of man hours went into making, like, even just the dial on a Royal Oak. I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, but I think it's like Glouche or Glacé dial. The way that it's done, it's a machine that's turned by hand, and it takes hundreds of hours to make it. I've seen like the videos, and it's like, whoa, all that just for a dial. We're not even talking about the rotor and the engraving and the details and all that stuff. To me, it's just like, I really like to appreciate artistic works. And for as an artist, I guess for me, it's motivating, because it's like, wow, some human tapped into the unhuman part of themselves to design that, to make that. I truly believe that creative ideas are not self-formed. It's information that's given to us. Yeah. It's up to us to obey that message and act it out.
Yeah.
And so it's just like, I'm amazed by design. One of the things I tell people when I've spoken to people that are like down and out or don't believe in themselves or have this wild idea and think their ideas are true, even myself, it's like, I'll take a look around, and we can do this exercise now. You can literally look at everything in your purview, and all of it started with somebody's thought. Everything. The shape of those stones, the thing that holds the wood, your chairs, your ring light, your home, the beams, the shingles, like everything literally started in somebody's head.
And taking it deeper, started in God's mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And appreciating the gift that is the universe. That's one of the things I really like about physics. It felt like I was learning more about the universe that was created for us. And it was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
You know? And the more I learned, the more I was like, that is so awesome. I get to appreciate that art more.
Yeah, the more another thing that I'm like really into is space. Like, I nerd out.
Like space, outer space. Oh, cool.
And the more I learn about the way the universe works, the stronger my faith gets.
100%.
Like, there's no way that all this is random. Like, it just doesn't make sense, especially how mathematical it is. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
There is, two books. One, A Brief History of Time, by Stephen Hawking, which was somewhat comical to me, because as I read it, he is devoutly atheist, and in it he explicitly talks that I am disproving the existence of God. And as I read that book, you have made my faith so much stronger.
Right.
It just seems like such an obvious argument for the existence of God. But then there's another one, which is The Return of the God Hypothesis. Now, this is a highly technical, very long, science-y book, but it is very, you know, piece-by-piece articulated arguments for how measurable, quantifiable things point to the existence of a creator. So those were things like why the universal constants that we have discovered, like why is the gravitational constant or Coulomb's constant what it is.
What's Coulomb's constant?
Things that the strength between electromagnetic forces.
Okay.
Like, if any of those universal constants were even slightly different, the universe would not exist as we know it. Life could not exist. The fact that there is a beginning to time, points to the existence of God. And then another one was about the way in which DNA is structured. It's like very programmatic. It's not, hey, we're just going to throw this in a soup. It is a code, a really highly complex, complicated code, but that gives rise to a coder, a designer.
So I was going to ask,
yeah,
speaking of code and the designer, so I think when we look at God in a biblical sense, it's almost like everything's done magically. Right. Mm. Almost like what he creates is a form of magic. Is it possible that he may create in a way that is more pragmatic and almost like creating code? Or is that just how his active creation shows up in our dimension for us to understand?
Well, I think there's two different things. And now we're talking, this is Logan's opinion here, but there is the way the universe normally operates 99% of the time, and those seem to be constructed in such a way it points to the nature of God. In fact, when back in the day Newton was devoutly Christian, a lot of the scientists were very Christian, and so there was the written word, which is Bible, religious texts and stuff, but then there was also the natural word. And so the idea of studying physics and nature and the natural law was that this was another way we could learn about God. And so what it points to is, hey, it's not just random. It's not the gods of the Greek or the pagan whatever who just get angry and smite. And like it's total chaos out there, but rather God is logical and structured, and there's an order to things. And certainly there is disorder that has entered our world, but we are in a place where things obey laws. Then I think there's another class of things, which are miracles, where perhaps through his divine knowledge, a series of events occurs such that something happens through the laws of nature, but is in a miraculous kind of way. I also think it's certainly possible that God is like, let me use my divinity to do something that that is truly impossible. For example, Christ walking on water.
Right.
Like I don't think that the water froze underneath him as he was stepping. You know.
The Matrix.
You know. Yeah. Right. But hey, that is some divine miracle. I really like spacing on the name, not Lewis Carroll.
Lewis C. Clark.
C.S. Lewis. Yeah. C.S. Lewis.
Lewis C. Clark is a comedian.
I know. C.S. Lewis.
We were getting there.
Yeah, C.S. Lewis. Clive Stapleton Lewis and his writings. But he has several, like, on Christianity, on miracles. Mm-hmm. And I think he puts it forth in a really logical way. And I think a part of that is because he was devoutly atheist.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So he was devoutly atheist and had this, through a process of logic and reflecting on himself and reflecting on the world and really breaking it down, why is this, step by step by step? And that led him to a place of deep belief and understanding in a way that maybe not everybody who is born Christian and we just kind of accept things and move on. He was forced to really walk the dog on, why do I believe this? And so I think in a lot of his writings, he's really good at laying it out in a palatable, understandable, very artistic way.
Okay.
Thomas Aquinas has a quote that I like, especially as a scientist. He is down on the beach and he's pondering existence and life and God, and he's trying to wrap his brain around it, and he's really like struggling to just grasp all this. And he comes upon a little boy, and the boy has dug a hole and he is scooping water from the ocean into the hole. And he goes, what are you doing? And the boy says, I am trying to get the ocean into the hole. And Thomas Aquinas goes, well, that's ridiculous. You'll never fit the whole ocean into the hole. And the boy looks up and goes, and neither will you fit the infinite existence of God into that tiny brain of yours, and then vanishes.
Whoa.
And so now I'm paraphrasing and probably butchering the specific words, but the idea that I think there's a bit of humility that's involved in like, hey, I'm excited. I'm trying to learn more about this amazing universe that's been created for us. but also the humility of I will never understand the infinite wisdom of God. Okay, cool. Right. And maybe I can learn this tiny little piece by investigating.
And don't physicists, don't they believe like now that the universe operates on 11 dimensions or up to 11 dimensions?
I think you're talking about string theory.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, that is not something I have studied greatly. My research is in a lot in nuclear physics.
Yeah. Okay.
Being a physicist doesn't give me carte blanche understanding of all, you know.
Silly human.
Yeah, I know.
All right, fair enough. I've actually never spoken to any type of physicist before, so I guess I'm like, I'm asking all these questions.
No, I got it.
There you go. So, nuclear physicist, what made you choose that path?
When I was...
And you don't... I'm sure you get this all the time, but you do not come off like the...
Well, actually...
You don't seem like a scientist at all.
Well, thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. I get it. When I was in high school, there was a physics competition, and I was not on the physics team, but my physics teacher, Miss Reisinger, knew that it was something I enjoyed. I was in her class, and she was like, hey, you know, Timmy is sick or whatever and can't go to the competition, you should come with us. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds fun. And so I went and I showed up and I wore my Letterman jacket and got super made fun of. And I was like, people making fun of me for wearing a Letterman jacket? What? I didn't realize that was a thing. And then I won that competition and humble brag. But I realized, hey, I can be good at this, right? Like I didn't see myself in that community just because I didn't fit that mold, which is why when I showed up, I was seen as an outsider. But I recognized, oh man, this is beautiful and fascinating. It's puzzles and I liked solving puzzles. And then I pursued that in college. I did physics there. I didn't do any of the nuclear stuff there. I continued in grad school and I learned a lot. And then through the Army, they reached out. There aren't a lot of physicists in the Army. We think you would be a good candidate for this other field. And so I switched my branch. And I kind of left the normal Army to do this kind of specialized thing and have been a scientist for the Army since then, which has been awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Have you ever got to conduct any experiments or experience anything? And you don't have to like talk in detail. I'm really like a yes or no answers suffice, but have you ever conducted any experiments or experienced anything in your practices since that have like really blown your mind, like, wow, I can't believe I got to work on that, or I can't believe I just learned this?
Yeah, man, there has been some really cool stuff. You know, I've been pretty blessed to do some really cool, exciting, both theoretical and like physical experiments, but then going and seeing and being led into, and not like the president's you know, underground bunker kind of thing. But there's some things where you stop and you go, this is awesome. Actually, kind of funny. We're going through some of the training and it was a very classified kind of thing. And I remember I was falling asleep. And because it was the third week of going through this stuff and we're learning about all these different things that people have literally killed and died for. And I was utterly falling asleep. And I remember thinking in that moment, get it together, my man. Like, this is such a cool thing. Pay attention. I was like, all right, I'll pay attention. But I love it, man. Okay. It's gotten dark. The fire is dying.
You want to call it?
How can people reach out? You are so multifaceted. You have all these amazing experiences. And frankly, I think you are pushing out and expanding yourself in a way that not a lot of people do. Like the epitome of a manly man. I love that. It reminds me of where Jesus talks about the talents. And, you know, and he's the one guy gets one talent and he goes and he buries it. Somebody gets two talents, turns it into four. Somebody gets five talents and he turns it into 10. And you're out there doubling your talents. I love that.
Thank you.
What is your advice for other men out there who are trying to find their path?
I don't know if I'm qualified to give advice because I'm benchmarking myself with people that I'm aspiring to be.
aren't we all? You know?
Yeah, you know.
I mean, you are in the pursuit of greatness in a lot of different areas.
I think that the best advice I could give is to be patient and have a really good governor. I forgot who said this, but it's really helped me along my journey because things haven't come as quickly as I thought that they would, and there's been all these twists and turns.
Yeah.
But success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. So even if you haven't quote-unquote made it yet, if you're working towards something and progressively realizing that you're getting closer and closer to it, you're already successful. And for me, at least, that's been tremendously helpful for my mental health and my ability to dig in deep and keep going.
I love that, man. It's the pursuit of greatness that matters.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay. How do people find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at the Christopher Great. It's Christopher with the C-H-R-I, the traditional way you spell it. Last name is G-R-A-T-E. At the Christopher Great on Instagram. And that's all I'm going to give you because I enjoy being a private person.
The Christopher Great. I love it, man. Chris, thank you so much, brother. I really appreciate you coming out. And boy, I really enjoyed getting to know you better.
Yeah,
man.
Same here, man.
Do it again,
this
man.
Is great. It didn't feel like a podcast at all. Now it does because we're closing it. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Doug.
It was awesome.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Number Your Stories podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and share, and give us a 5-star review wherever you're listening. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out at numberyourstories@gmail.com. And as a reminder, the views and ideas expressed here do not reflect the official policy of the United States Military Academy, the Department of the Army, the Department of Defense, or the U.S. government. Stay safe out there. God bless.